It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And here we go, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all along. And lots to talk about on today's show. At least Mike has gone fishing. No, I've been doing spraying, so.
One day.
Yeah, we got to do some fishing. So we'll talk about some offshore fishing. Here we are looking at, what, weekend three?
Yep.
And I have yet to go snapper fishing.
And I think we're in the majority. I mean, I've only been one time, but I really believe that we're in the majority. I don't think there's been that many people go fishing. I'll tell you why I say that. Saturday morning, we went to lunch. I fished with Mark Candy and went to launch his boat. And I was thinking, man, you know, it's like.
Yeah, this is going to be a cluster.
Yeah, it's like almost getting close to 6 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, no.
If I don't get down there at 4:30 in the morning, and I won't get a place to park.
Right.
And I'm thinking, man, this is going to be a mess when we get around there close to 6 o'clock. Well, we got around there. There was like three small truck trailers. That was it at Big Billy Goat Hole. That was it. This was Saturday morning, the second weekend of snapper season. Tell me.
For me, I mean, I had other stuff going on, too, but I also looked. The forecast didn't look great for me.
No, but it was. I mean, it was fine. Of course, we're fishing in a big old 37-foot front runner catamaran boat. I mean, it was fine.
It's a difference.
It was a little choppy. It was, you know, swells. It's just some swells. It wasn't rough. It's just some swells you pop off a little bit on. But other than that, I mean, it was good fishing.
Right.
It really was.
It's just, you know, you get a big enough boat and you got the swells. But the problem is, sometimes you don't know till you go. We often say, you know, you look at it, you look at the forecast, and I use an app called Windfinder. There's other ones out there, but you know, anything when I start getting in the twos, it's not the end of anything. But I usually, if it says three, 2.5, I don't go.
No,
if it gets that way, it's not the end of the world. We're fishing; we keep fishing. That's not a big deal. We'll keep fishing a lot.
But you
more.
Don't want to go.
Yeah,
and the beauty part of the snapper season being the way it is, seven days a week and open from now till it looks like.
Yep.
And with especially the way it is now, nobody's hardly been. I mean, you can go whenever. So if it looks like it's going to be a little rough, hey, I'll go the next week. No big deal.
Plus, it's been, I don't know how it was offshore, but it's just, you know, we went from, we've talked about this before, but we went from a drought that seemed to last 4 or 5 months, if not longer, to all of a sudden making it up in the month of May. Last month, we made up all the deficit in rain we had.
That's right. Yeah.
In the month of May, when it's not really supposed to rain a whole bunch.
Record May.
Yeah.
Yes. So, I mean, the water out there inshore is really pretty. Now, we got out in, you know, maybe 200 foot of water, and the water's muddy.
Is that coming out of Louisiana, you think?
I don't know, because we went to the west from there, and we went towards Chandelier Islands, and the water got to be beautiful. You know, it was really pretty water.
So you're just in a pocket at your pocket.
I guess. And then we went south and got in some 300 foot of water, and the water was great out there. So I don't know. South of Dauphin Island is like a pocket of bad water. I don't understand it.
Well, the fish didn't care, did they?
Well, no, not what we did. Now let me tell you this. We were fishing a little redneck king mackerel tournament out of Dauphin Island. There's about 10 or 12 boats, I guess, somewhere in there fishing it. And we fished, we had some great bait, some perfect bait. And we fished about 4 or 5 places, and about, I don't know, probably about 12 o'clock, Mark said, "This ain't getting it. Let's go catch something to eat." We didn't catch a king mackerel. Now, there was three, and think about
how many boats fished?
10 or 12, somewhere around there. Just a little redneck king mackerel tournament out of Dauphin Island. But there was three king mackerel caught, a 17-pounder, a 16.5, and a 15, I believe.
That's horrible.
Isn't that unbelievable?
That's horrible.
Yes. So we're going to have to get Mark in here to let him explain what he thinks the explanation is, because he can throw you terms out. I can't. I don't, you know. he says things I don't, whatever. I think he's probably right, but we'll get him to come in here one day and explain what he thinks going on with the king mackerel.
Is it just in general that they're not there, or that they're not there?
Well, he thinks
meaning that they're not at these spots, or they.
He thinks it's hypoxic water.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's okay. That's
you know what,
gist of it.
Lucky for us, our guest coming up after we go to the news, come back. Dr. Sean Powers is joining us. We're going to talk about the Amberjack report, but. Talk about hypoxic water. We got the scientists on to talk about that.
And maybe he can explain a little more to us about that. Hopefully they're going to do a study on king mackerel and try to figure out what's going on. I heard something actually yesterday that, you know, Mexico was catching a lot of the kings that come up here. So maybe.
So is it the water or is it just not as many fish, you know?
We don't know. Now, in the fall, you can go out and mm-hmm. just kill the king mackerel off of Dolphin Island. I mean, they come in the fall. They used to be like that year-round, mm-hmm. pretty much. And in the fall, it would get better, you know. But now, it's just this time of year, there's just nothing out there hardly. Now, in the wintertime, you can go to the deep water mm-hmm. out there, you know, around the salt domes and the horseshoe rigs and all that. Now, there's kings out there in the wintertime in January, February, March. Where they go from there, I just don't know.
Okay. Well, that's maybe we'll get some ideas here when Dr. Powers gets on with us. So, but y'all snapper fishing was good.
Well, yeah, we had a great
looked like good fish.
Yeah, we caught some big fish, big snapper, some big scamp.
I noticed the big scamp.
Yeah.
I didn't even notice you coming knocking on my door bringing me a fillet. So
I forgot about you, Sean. And then we caught a couple of really nice gag grouper. Caught one really nice one. Of course, got to release those.
Yeah. I remember seeing. There was a big gag group.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't hold him up by myself. I had to get Dylan to help me hold him up.
Yep.
So, I mean, it was a pretty good one. It was over 20 pounds.
What, and scamp or what? They look big.
I don't know. I didn't weigh them. One of them was bigger. We caught several of them, but the fish that were in the pictures
were not ones you were measuring. They were not measured fish.
No.
They were big enough that they.
Oh, no. They're all good fish, all of them.
Okay,
and we didn't fish really all that long for snapper and scamp and grouper. We just didn't run out of time, so we didn't fish all that long. It was 12, 1 o'clock probably before we even started, and then we had, even though we didn't have any fish back, we wanted to get back before it got dark, clean mm-hmm. the boat up and everything. So I mean, we probably can't start back in 4:30, 5 o'clock or so, somewhere around there. So we didn't spend that long fishing for them.
Well, maybe, your story might be true. There's just not a whole bunch of people that have gone already, so we'll see that. Also, I want to hit a couple news items here before we go to the news, and we'll come back with Dr. Powers. And I would add to that list things that have happened here this week. Of course, if you're listening to this show sometime in the future, and a best of or whatever, this is June of 2026. Registration for Gator season opened up this week.
Yeah.
So you can go OutdoorAlabama.com and click through there to register for the different zones in the state. So get those in. And I think the drawing usually is somewhere around Independence Day, early July. So you've got this month here to put your registration in.
Yeah.
So put those in for the gator hunts if you want to hunt. Also, I think it's pretty cool. I said we're going to try to get Caleb Blake with the state on to talk about this avid turkey hunter thing that I was involved in. And we would log how many gobbles we heard in a day. Did we kill a bird? How many hens you saw? How many gobblers you saw? They took all this data and crunched it. It's pretty
from
cool.
A lot of people.
A lot of people.
Yeah.
A lot of people out there. You had to be somebody, they said, do you hunt 10 days a year or more? And I said, yes, I do. Do you turkey hunt 10 days in a season? And I did. And so they got people like me volunteering all over the state. And each day you'd log in. I heard this many birds gobble. What time did they start? How many hens did you see? How many jakes did you see? All that kind of stuff. It's really cool because they put all this information together and we get him on to talk about that. But in the meantime, too, this is just out as well. They're doing a survey here. More important than goblin birds, I'll tell you right now, is littles, poults.
Right.
And right now, Alabama Department of Conservation Natural Resources is doing a poult survey. And this goes this month through August 31st. Okay, so June 1st through August 31st. And if you go on Outdoor Alabama as well, look for Wild Turkey Brood Survey. And they're getting folks just to report what they see poll-wise, kind of like we do amongst each other.
Sure.
Like, you see any polls, you see any polls. Well, it's going to be like that Gobbler survey, or the hunting survey. They're going to let you see this thing, and it's going to help you put that information in and then put it all together with people from around the state to get an idea of that most important story, right? What's happening with the poults, the new crop of turkeys. So that's going on as well. So I thought it was worth noting. Hopefully we'll get Caleb on here soon with us to talk about it, and we can talk about it. It's open now. And
yeah,
if you go to OutdoorAlabama.com, Wild Turkey Brood Survey. Sign up for that. Get the data in there as well. All right, coming right back, Dr. Sean Powers joins us right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you along. And a reminder here, yeah, so the registration for gator season open now through end of this month. So get that in. In addition here, the turkey poult survey. I think it's pretty cool. That avid turkey survey, turkey hunter survey I was in, the data is very cool. Hopefully we get Caleb on the show to talk about it soon. And now they're doing it for poults. So you get involved in it, see poults when you're out in the woods, whatever, around the neighborhood, wherever
and
you live.
How do you report it?
Well, you go outdooralabama.com, okay, and there's a turkey poult, turkey poult survey, something to that effect on there. You click that, takes you in, you sign up, and you put your data in. So okay, make sure you get on board with that. And we mentioned, as we were talking about fishing in the first segment, we'd be joined by the one and only Dr. Sean Powers, University of South Alabama Marine Sciences, Dolphin Island Sea Lab, and the emperor of judging at the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. They had their kickoff party this last week. So yep, welcome. Good to see you.
Good being here.
Last time in, we did a interview, the pre-snapper season interview, like we do every year, getting talking about what y'all were seeing out there, what the research was showing. Mike and I lamented in the first segment, Mike's gone once, I've gone zero. So we hadn't been a threat to him. I don't know. You said you didn't see a lot of people at the launch, Mike.
Yeah, Sean, I was went to the launch ramps this past Saturday morning at like close to 6 o'clock in the morning. And it was, I'm thinking, we're going to have a nightmare down there. Everybody trying to go launch a boat and go fishing. There was nobody launching the boat besides us. There was three trailers, and they were small boat trailers there, the car and trailer. That's it. At 6 o'clock, close to 6 wow, o'clock on Saturday morning, second opening weekend of snapper season. Now, explain that.
Maybe it's because they did such a good job with the boat ramps that everybody is very efficient coming in and out. I don't know. I'm sure gas prices play a role in that, you know, mm-hmm, everybody knows that the season's not going to close right away.
That's what we said earlier.
You know, yeah, because you're a notice.
Yeah, I mean, you're a biologist, a scientist, but part of this is social science, right? And I think when you open it up 7 days a week, you don't have the pressure. You go. You may even go less than you would because you kind of go, it looks like rain showers. It's like, I'll wait till next week.
I think that is the case. And we do have a couple of papers out where we were predicting effort in the red snapper fishery and the season length. You know, shorter seasons mean more intense effort and wind speed or wave height. And you're right. I mean, you know, you always get those. I'm like that, too. Well, it's just not quite right.
Yes.
I mean, you know, I'll go next weekend and then next weekend. And then you finally get a weekend and the missus, in my case, asked me, hey, did you put up those light fixtures I bought? And you're like, God.
I should have done that on the weekend I didn't go fishing. But
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, but that does surprise me. You know, it seemed like everything was in place. The new ramps, at least on Dolphin Island, are beautiful. Yeah. We'll see how the traffic flows work and the parking and all that. So all the pieces are there. I think the fish are there, or we know the fish are there. I'm surprised more people didn't go out.
Saturday was not a perfect weather day for a lot of people. I mean, it was fine. We was in a big old boat, so the weather was fine for us. It was some big swells, some pretty decent-sized swells out there. You'd pop off of those a little bit. But as far as rough, it wasn't rough, just some swells. So I think people maybe saw the forecast. I think it's going to be like 2 foot or two to three.
2.5, yeah.
Something like that, 2 to 3 or whatever. So maybe that's what held them back. Plus, like you say, the gas prices. I mean, there's a lot of people that, they don't want to, especially if it's not a perfect day, they don't want to go spend $600, $700, $800, $1,000 to go fishing if it's not a perfect day.
Agreed. And I can tell you there were lots of boats on the water. I was on the water this weekend looking for speckled trout and on the back of Dolphin Island. And just, it really wasn't rough except for the hundreds of boat wakes that were zinging by.
And I truly think
there was a lot of people out there. I don't know if they were fishing or most of them were probably just parked on the West End. But
there's something to be said for that, too, in the social science portion. Yes, it's open open weekend for snapper season, but at the same time, it's the full moon in May. And if you're somebody like me that does both, you're like, I could go snapper fish, but I can do that later. Gosh, the big girls are on the chew right now. I want to go catch some trout.
That's a fact. It was perfect for that.
Yeah, especially once you start hitting late June and July where the bite's going to slow down. But if you go offshore, you're going to catch some snapper. We generally don't get much wind during that time period. So, yeah, if you plan it like that. But again, you never know when that to-do list will show up. So,
I want to take a second, too, because that's what I always love about talking to Dr. Powers. Sean, not only scientist, but he's also, like us, a fisherman. So he's got that same proclivity to figure out to go fishing. So I got to talk to you. Before we even get in the great amberjack count and all that science stuff, how was trout fishing?
It was great. It really was. I mean, we've had some rain, so you've had to dodge it. But one of the things about these past couple of weekends, if you made sure you brought your foul weather gear and weren't afraid to get a little wet, you had cloud cover for a long part of the day. So the trout bite was good. And
good size fish. What range were you looking at in the trout you caught size-wise?
So I had to throw a couple back because they were over 22. So
a horrible thing to do, huh?
It was a horrible thing to do. So most for us on live bait, but we were catching them on gulps and slicks. I mean, they were munching. So, it was good.
Okay. So that's I hated I was not out there, but good for you. I'm glad you got to go. Now let's, we'll go back into his scientist hat, although on occasion he'll put his fishing hat back on as well. You mentioned last time you were here that the greater amberjack count is coming out, the great greater amberjack count.
Call it the greater amberjack count, yes.
But, of course, that greater, people read that and think it's the best ever, but it's about greater amberjack.
Correct.
Because we do have more than one kind of amberjack in the Gulf.
We do. So we have lesser amberjack and there's other species in that genus, Cereola. So
what's cool, too, is reading about this and reading the report when it came out this week, breezing through it, which is just, a lot of pages, so a lot of breeze go there. But to see, if you would ask me as a trivia question, are amberjack all over the world, I would have guessed yes. But y'all delineate early in that how far around the globe the same amberjack we're fishing for in the Gulf are half a complete world away.
Correct. We call it a cosmopolitan species.
Okay.
So it is present in all of the subtropical to equatorial waters. Now, and it's an important staple in a lot of third world countries. So it's not only us that want to pursue it, largely from a recreational point of view. But
so do they, those populations that you can tell, do they, like, as the eggs pelagically drifting around, find a new place to become big fish, do those kind of stay in their own area, or is there any research showing these drifted to a new area? The South Atlantic population gets into the Gulf. The Gulf gets in the South Atlantic. South Atlantic gets across the Atlantic to, the African coast. Is there anything like that?
Sure. I mean, the genetics tell us a lot about mixing. The only caveat there is you only need a few individuals each year to really make your gene pool kind of non-distinguishable. For example, in our greater amberjack count, the genetics, and there were really high-resolution genetics, didn't show much difference between the South Atlantic and the Gulf of Mexico or between East and West Gulf of Mexico. Now, that makes a little more sense for amberjack because they're all going to spawn more or less in the Keys. They're all going to go down there. But really? You only need one or two to kind of mix. Some will go deeper offshore, but so most of them are going to migrate.
An amberjack from here would migrate to the Keys.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's crazy.
So, and the really cool thing about all this technology, so we tagged about 400 amberjack, greater amberjack, and were able to track their movement through a network of hydrophones out in the ocean. The ones along the South Atlantic just went from the Keys up and then back and didn't spin up. I mean, their average time at a site was maybe 3 or 4 days. The ones in the Gulf kind of follow that same pattern, but our amberjacks stay at a site 60, 90 days. So it's a very different strategy. And since there's no genetic difference, it probably has to do with abundance of food, habitat. They just find a spot in the Gulf and largely stay there for most of the year. And then they'll leave when it's time to spawn.
Do they go straight across the Gulf to the Keys, or do they go, around – like to Panama
that
City?
That one we still have to guess at because most of the listening devices are along the coast. But it looks like they go along the coast, but they make a beeline for it. They hang out, and then it's time to go. They don't just, like cobia, we think, kind of migrate along, stop and feed. It looks like the amberjack just, when it's time to go, they go.
Where they go to spawn, is there fidelity to those? Is it like the spawning grounds? Does it end up being the same area every year?
It's not like grouper. Okay. Some of these Nassau groupers and some of those. No, it's a generally large area that they're going to go, like South Florida. I say the Keys, but it's South Florida, Cuba, Florida Straits.
You wonder how they find each other in to get that. I mean, if they're all going, I mean, how they find all the other ones end up in the same place to spawn.
Yep. I mean, that's...
Because it's not even like it's... They have some sense of this place. It's big general...
temperature. They're cueing them. They want this temperature, this kind of depth, this kind of pressure, and it just...
They all end up there.
They all end up there.
How... Amberjack that go to spawn, how big? I know there's probably outliers and all that, but what size amberjack do I look at and go, oh, that's a spawner?
So the legal is set right at 50% maturity. About 34 inches is about 34 to 36
inches. It's probably the middle of the bell curve of where they start.
Yep. Anything, once they hit 38, 39 inches, they're all reproductive. If they're 30, 32, very small amount. So it's right around the size that they're harvestable.
Very cool. We're going to come back and talk more about this, about amberjack. Now we know they're everywhere. Let's talk about amberjack we pay the most attention to right here in the Northern Gulf, and we'll get more with Dr. Sean Powers. That greater amberjack is the greater amberjack survey is out now too, right? People can get it?
Yep.
All right, because I knew I got a copy, but I'm glad that...
Yep, it's out there, and there's some fancy storyboards.
Oh, it's pretty cool.
It's
pretty cool. And the pictures, y'all. It's good stuff. We'll talk more about this when we come back. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, and our buddy Dr. Sean Powers, University of South Alabama Marine Sciences, Dolphin Island Sea Lab, and Emperor of the Judging at the Alabama Deep Sea Fish Rodeo. Those guys have been on with us recently here, and it is, tickets should be going on sale, Father's Day weekend. Rodeo coming 93rd?
Yep, 93rd.
93rd. Way to go, boys. Way to go. Yep. JC's. All right, let's talk about amberjack. And before we go any further in this, what was the motivation to do? Why do this survey, this greater amberjack survey, this count.
So the background leads us to why we did the great red snapper count.
We remember that one.
That showed roughly about three times as many red snapper in the Gulf of Mexico as
the federal
assessment showed. And really it comes back to that fishermen are experiencing on the water a disconnect with what some of these assessments are saying. So just like any good citizen, they go and complain to their congressman
sure.
or senator. And they call scientists and they say, you know, how do we resolve this? Who's right on this? Who's closer to this? And so in this case, Senator Shelby, in one of his last studies that he funded, said, well, y'all do what y'all did for greater red snapper with greater amberjack. And then, but the South Atlantic also wanted to be involved in this greater amberjack study. So from North Carolina to Texas, we had investigators working with us. We led the study from South Alabama. And, you know, 10 years ago, we didn't have the technology we had, the underwater cameras, the acoustics, the tracking abilities. So we have a whole lot more technology to throw at this question. And it was, can we come up with an estimate of the population that's free from a lot of the assumptions that the stock assessment has to make. And basically, stock assessments reconstruct the population size of any fish species based on the catch. So especially when you start controlling catch a whole lot and limiting catch, then all of a sudden, catch data may not give you the whole story. And then fishermen don't tell the truth all the time when reconstructing catch. the catch systems, the commercial ones are really good now, but the recreational ones, it's just really hard to estimate catch. So taking all of that, can you do something that doesn't involve reconstructing the population from just catch? And we said, sure. And one of the things we've done a lot of at the university and the Sea Lab is let's throw this technology at it. Let's just count fish. Let's do this novel thing with go out to enough places and just count the fish. And then we can calculate the number.
So when we calculate by saying, for lack of a better term, there's these grids and we've counted this many in, and we can assume that there's X number of grids times the number of fish. Kind of, I know that's
correct.
Super simple.
No, but, no yeah. And it is. I mean, the only piece you're missing there is we grid it all up, and then we usually map the amount of habitat there. Fish are associated with habitat.
Mm-hmm.
So you get an average number of fish on this type of habitat in this grid, and then you can multiply it out. You have to do it enough to be statistically rigorous and to calculate your variance around the estimate. But when we did all of that for amberjack, it turns out that the stock assessment along the South Atlantic and our numbers are pretty close. The stock assessment says there should be 2.6 million, or there was 2.6 million at the last year of the stock assessment.
Which was when?
2018.
Oh, wow.
So it was a little dated. So we saw about 500,000 more. The South Atlantic fishery is not considered overfished, nor is overfishing occurring, so it's considered to be a healthy stock. The Gulf has always been a troubling one for the scientists to get a hold of, because if you believe the stock assessment, it's been overfished for about 20 years, and overfishing has occurred in most of those years, which is kind of hard to believe that you haven't crashed that stock if that's the case. So it turns out that the assessment for in the Gulf predicted there would be 1.6 million greater amberjack, again, in 2018 when they finished it. We showed closer to 4 million amberjack.
Wow.
So similar to the great red snapper count. Now we have to get together with the stock assessment folks and determine, you know, is our number so much different because you've been managing amberjack at such a tight harvest level? Or was there something fundamentally wrong? Were you underestimating the productivity of the stock? And that was the case, we believe, with the great red snapper count, was they were just underestimating the productivity of the stock. Interestingly, there was a great red snapper count that I wasn't involved in the South Atlantic that used a slightly different technique. And that number kind of lined up with the South Atlantic red snapper stock assessment. So it seems like the Gulf, for some reason, our numbers, when we go in there and do a truly fishery independent estimate, seem to be higher. So it's probably a combination of our numbers are more up to date and that the previous stock assessment is underestimating the productivity.
Yeah, I would try to understand this, make sure I get it right. So when you have one that's angler involved, right, and if they're taking something by the number of landings of amberjack, meaning something to the population of amberjack, but they continue to move seasons, they're shorter, or they're at times a year, back to the, you know, the human science of it, where people are not as tuned into gulf fishing. And if there are fewer come in, are they saying because fewer were landed, therefore there are fewer out there, versus saying, well, there's less days they could catch them? Or is it, I mean, when you say angler involved versus y'all are not, y'all are fisheries independent of that, it seems like if you told me I had fewer days to catch them, or you put those times a year where I don't go, and then you go, look, they must be in trouble because Sullivan didn't land a amberjack. Why didn't go like I used to, or something that?
So they'll try. You're absolutely right, but they try to control for as much of that. They'll try to keep effort. They'll have landings, or the catch, and then they'll have effort that they try to quantify, and then they'll try to guess what the new harvest limit does mm-hmm. to it. Where that, you know, historically, if you had no harvest limit, landings should track the amount of fish being removed or the potential. But if once you cap it, then all of a sudden it becomes, well, how quickly did they get their quota? How quickly did they get their landing? So you've taken a very simple model based on landings, and because the management gets more and more complex as more and more people go fishing, you have to make a ton more assumptions. The Gulf red snapper assessment, for example, is one of the most complicated models. It has 1,900 parameters Jeez. That you have to estimate. Whereas when we go out and do this direct estimation, maybe there's 25, 30 parameters, because we can't census every fish out there.
Right, but you've taken the people and the regulation out of it. You're just looking at fish.
Yeah, and the other thing that's great about these types of studies that we do is they're expensive, but you can do them periodically. And if somebody doesn't believe my results, if the feds don't believe mine or the state or someone in the public, there's the video, count the number of fish that we saw, and here's how we multiplied it. So I like these approaches because they get us away from reconstructing the fishery based on catch, you know, whether they're higher or lower. The good thing is I think we're going to start looking at amberjack again and hopefully be able to reconcile it, because right now amberjack won't open potentially until September if it opens September.
And if you're looking at it in another model, not your model, but you're looking at one that's dependent on catch or something like that, they'll say, well, it was open X number of days. But people may not, in September, we're going dove hunting.
Yeah.
Or school stuff. I mean, we may not go if you had that same number of days in July. That number might be a lot higher just because of the way people do things.
No, and I am – where I'm different than where we were with the great red snapper count is I am extremely hopeful now that NOAA Fisheries, National Marine Fisheries Service, wants to come collectively find an answer to these. This was not the case when we released the great red snapper count number. I think their reaction was knee-jerk, that y'all accusing us of being wrong. There was very much thought to protect the agency as opposed to now there's been leadership changes at NOAA. One of our former students is the undersecretary, Laura Grimm, there. And there's just I've just seen it from – maybe it was just the novelty at the time that – but now we've been in contact with a whole lot more of their scientists saying, well, you know, make sure these data are available so we can look at it. They've been much more open-minded. I hope that translates into some changes in management. But I've been, towards the end of this project, I've been very hopeful that the dialogue exchange wasn't so, you know, accusatory. Mm-hmm. So, but no, amberjack is a fun species to catch. Not, you know, here, I don't think people target them as much as it's an incidental catch almost.
Yes, majority, yes.
I mean, some charter guys will. But I tell you one thing, that the big difference is the differences in size, as you see. The amberjack off Louisiana and Texas, probably those pictures they were using, are all Louisiana and Texas fish. Our amberjack get big, but we just don't have as many studs.
Don't give the Texans anything else to be proud of. We're coming right back. More with Dr. Sean Powers right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoor. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, our friend Dr. Sean Powers, University of South Alabama Marine Sciences, Dolphin Island Sea Lab. And by the way, too, we talked about the report being out. Can you send us, I mean, I can put it up on our socials as well for the link, but is there somewhere they should go to get it if they don't come to us?
Yes, University of South Alabama. So southalabama.edu/marinesciences.
Okay, and it's a lengthy document, well researched, and pretty darn cool pictures.
Yeah, too. If you just type Google, put in your Google greater amberjack count, I think it should come up.
And it's a lot. I mean, a lot in there. But I like the fact too that you've always been good as a scientist, but you speak regular human. That's why you come on the show with us, because you can talk. This report, too, y'all, the science is in there, but they break it out in graphs and things that I can look at and digest more easily. So instead of it just being all these pages of stuff that we might not get.
It is an obnoxious length, there's no doubt. 700 and some odd pages. The executive summary puts everything out in about 4 or 5. I'm just happy that, you know, we can – that technology is getting such that we can apply it. And, you know, we have AI in the back trying to help us process all these videos and everything. These were not processed by AI. These were all – we're still working on the AI processing.
This is just regular old human beings?
It's just lots of graduate students with lots of clickers.
Oh, I mean, your pledges. I mean, your graduate students. Yes.
No, in this one, it was – you know, interesting because since it's video-based, you know, there are other species of Cereola that's the genus greater amberjack is in. And when they're kind of small, you know, what's a greater amberjack? What's a lesser amberjack? What's an Almaco jack?
Yeah.
And those things. We had some environmental DNA so we could tell what species were supposed to be there versus which ones we were identifying. So some really cool science, but obviously the management implication is, you know, can we use this information to speed up amberjack opening the season? You know, right now it takes a while. I think, you know, there's still some question of whether it's going to reopen in September. You know, can this information be used?
How fast
is an interim?
Yeah, what I mean, you have a sense of like information gets to them, and then I see the big machine, the cogs of the wheel start turning. How long till
it will take a while through the formal process. Now, what they could do is do some interim rules that's saying, hey, you know, we don't know how to resolve all of this between the assessment and the amberjack count yet, but it looks like there's enough fish out there for the interim, so let's open the season back up at least for a short period of time while we've reconcile all the different information streams. And that's kind of what they did for the great red snapper count was, you know, we don't know exactly where the number is going to fall between the assessment and this, which one's more accurate, but we know there's enough fish out there and we're hearing from enough fishermen. That's the other thing too, is if if I wasn't hearing the same thing from fishermen, I'd be like, well, you know, we should just wait. But most fishermen, particularly Louisiana, Texas, and even in Alabama, have said, you know, amberjack are out there. We're catching amberjack. So that kind of says, well, you know, we can formally reconcile everything. It's going to take months, maybe years, but let's go a little more liberal with our quotas while we do this, because there's good sense there's enough amberjack.
There's enough
there.
Buffer in that between the yep. two that the opening it some more is not going to send you over a ledge. So hopefully, and you know, to me too, if they're looking at how it works, you could open days of open season doesn't mean the same as days of open season during certain times of year.
Yep.
Right. I mean, they could open say, man, we're going to open November and December for amberjack. It's just not as many people are going to go.
Well, from what Sean's saying, they're not going to be here anyway. They're going to be down in the Keys spawning.
Well, they'll be, you know, some do kind of trickle and stay, but most of them should be gone.
Yeah, that's true. So they wouldn't catch them. But I just want to make sure, like, when we open it at a time that they're going to be there.
Right.
You correct.
Know, and that the people can, because it's just human beings part. We're going to go certain times of year.
Now, and this was Texas's objection to the May opening, the April and May opening is that's not when they're abundant off Texas. So again, that kind of reemphasizes we need some local, more state management.
Yeah.
On these things, Texas can get their quota and fish it when they want.
Yeah, you know, when they're
Louisiana,
showing up,
I mean, Mississippi. So, and I know that's one of the big things the state wants. Our state of Alabama wants to expand, and I think most of the states. You know, the red snapper model worked. It's not perfect. Some people might want a bigger average size. Some people might want even more days. But giving the states the ability to decide what's best for their anglers seems to have worked very well for red snapper, and hadn't caused some big crash in the population. So let's start doing that with more species.
Yeah, that's a nice thing. I mean, I've done it for red snapper. Now, if this works for the amberjack, you have a way to show confidence. And if it's another species down the road, you're saying, okay, look at here. Here's our track. We're not just saying it. Here's what we did before, and here's what it showed.
Yep.
Appreciate that.
And maybe they'll do that on triggerfish too, I hope.
Triggerfish would be the next one that we would like. And me and a few of the other investigators have said, hey, between the great red snapper count and the amberjack count, we have all of this video. Maybe we have enough video to estimate triggerfish already.
Yeah.
On these.
Just because they're there when you're looking at something else.
Yep. You see tons of videos of other species. You know, there's some vermilion snapper will be hard because they go in schools. But no, triggerfish is, you know, if we pick the three kind of most controversial species right now, it'd be red snapper, amberjack, and triggerfish. If we can.
And grouper. Grouper's going to be another issue, too. Gag grouper. It's not open now. And a lot of people want to catch gag grouper, and there's plenty of them out there. So, that's going to be an issue there, too.
Okay. Well, there we go. But at least if we can get one day where we have a summers that we can, for months on end, catch snapper, amberjack, and triggerfish on the same trip, it'd be a beautiful thing.
It would be a beautiful
thing. Be like the old days,
that's
man.
Right. Hey, Dr. Powers, good to see you.
Good seeing you. And y'all go catch them up this weekend.
We're going to do it. All right. We'll do it again next week for another edition of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors.